Rodriguez. Away by Villar, only as far as Dos Santos, blinked after him, Dos Santos with a shot! Dos Santos with the goal! Mexico take the lead! Do the Europeans have? Dos Santos is the man that was in the opening game for Mexico against Cameroon. Won't get this one, shipments for Mexico.
Welcome to the Law Podcast from These Football Times. I'm Jim Hart, your host, as usual. Today we've got a little special treat for you all out there. We've got a friend coming on the show today who is a CONCACAF guy, so we're going to talk a lot of CONCACAF at the World Cup for a while today. So let's kick this baby off. I've got, as always, our co-host here, Mr. Stephen Scragg from the great city of Liverpool. How are you, Stephen?
We're well, Jim. We're very well, well.
So,
how's it going, Jim?
Good, man. I guess congratulations are in order. You guys, Liverpool's in the Champions League next year, and much to the dismay of those of us who follow Chelsea.
Indeed, Jim. Indeed. It was a fine way to end the league season. You know, it might actually do us a favour for the trip to Kiev as well, because it's... You know, it's kept us focused, and we've had to put in a performance. So, you know, we're not going to get to Kiev thinking we've not actually played a game for 3 weeks and be off the ball. You know, hopefully that'll energize players.
No, it's terrific. And, you know, Mo Salah has had one of those seasons that most people dream about.
He's just been sensational. You know, knew he was a good player, but how good has just been... You know, a revelation to see him, and you know, incredible that we feel like we've stolen him from Roma, basically. You know, given the transfer fee in comparison to what goes now, certainly the bargain of the decade.
Yeah, no question about that. Yet another one of Jose Mourinho's giant transfer mistakes, in my opinion, but. Oh, well. So, joining us for this podcast today, also from Belfast, we've got a These Football Times senior writer and co-host of many shows with me in days gone by. It's good to have you on the show again, Mr. Chris Weir.
Thanks very much, Jim. It's been quite a long time since the last one. You must have got sick of me complaining about Arsenal, but thankfully, next week. You'd be much more positive around North London anyway. You might detect more happiness and sunshine in my voice from now on, but we'll see how we go on.
Well, yeah, I was looking at the final standings. Didn't Burnley finish ahead of Woolwich in the final standings?
I prefer to just keep us focused and let's not go off on too many tangents, especially after one.
Too funny. Too funny. Well, welcome back, Chris. I'm really happy. I'm really happy that you were able to join us for these podcasts today. So now, also, we've got a very special guest who's going to join us for part one today. Gentleman who has been on These Football Times, the Law Podcast before, from San Diego, California, Mr. Nate Aborea. How are you, Nate?
Very good. I'm loving this list of cities here on the Lob Pod. Liverpool, Belfast, San Diego, and let's not forget about Centennial, Colorado.
Centennial, Colorado. That's right. That's good old Denver. I think Centennial's just kind of a made-up city, so I'm not sure. But yeah, so we're sitting here in South Denver. Looking at the lovely gray clouds today. It looks like Liverpool out here.
we've had beautiful sunshine for the last week and a half now. We're enjoying our summer at the minute.
Oh, really?
it's what we like to call allez yeah. weather. It's a very nice time of year.
It is. The football, no matter how good or poor it is, seems so much better when you can see the big long shadows across the pitch. It's such a shame that the football season's finishing.
Well, that's okay, because we've got the World Cup coming up here in, 31 days, I believe? Is that,
Yes, it is, 14th of June, yeah.
which is kind of what we're here to talk about. So today we're going to be here in part one. We're going to be talking about CONCACAF and their role in the World Cups. And, you know, being one of those confederations that, you know, never seems to have the real powerhouses, but, you know, they have definitely produced some national sides that have made some noise over the years. And I expect they'll probably make some noise again this year with the addition of Panama coming in. So, Nate, why don't you give us a little background and tell us about your relationship with CONCACAF and Mexico and all that good stuff.
It's a little bit of an interesting time to share all that, seeing as how the United States men's national team managed to give us the greatest disappointment and the biggest disgrace in, I feel, not only American soccer history, but in CONCACAF history, with not qualifying for the World Cup that we're all looking forward to here in 2018. But I, for one, am not going to let the failure to qualify and all the different reasons that went into it, I'm not going to let that dampen my enthusiasm for what is the greatest sporting spectacle in the world, which is, of course, this World Cup. And this time around in Russia, there's some high hopes for the three CONCACAF teams. Panama, I think the hope is to get out of a very, very challenging group with England, Tunisia, and Belgium. I think with Mexico getting to the quarterfinal and breaking that that famous Mexican national team curse of not being able to get past the round of 16 and getting that fifth game in. And for Costa Rica is the one that kind of makes me smile, kind of gets you blushing a bit, thinking about the fact that Costa Rica were a quarterfinalist at the last World Cup. Costa Rica, I know it's a bit of a different squad this time around, but there's still many familiar faces from Brazil 2014. You're talking about a team that was a penalty shootout away from being a semifinalist in 2014 when we're talking about the Ticos. You're talking about a team that beat the United States 4-0 and 2-0 home and away in the final CONCACAF hexagonal in the qualifying cycle. And I think Costa Rica are a side that often get overlooked historically in CONCACAF. So tying this all back to kind of my background with this region, it's very Mexican-American and American-Mexican based. And a lot of people consider that, you know, what kind of represents my personal background in CONCACAF football. That's what a lot of people kind of just view as CONCACAF football. It's the U.S. and Mexico. And growing up where I grew up, that was all there was in my hometown of Watsonville, which is a 90% Mexican-American population, and just having that fervor and passion for Mexican soccer around me at all times. Growing up supporting the United States men's national team through thick and thin and everything that went with the USA-Mexico rivalry. So often, because of all these things that we're talking about, Costa Rica just get completely overlooked, and I feel like the Ticos have a very good chance, as good of a chance certainly as Panama or Mexico, to make some serious noise here in the 2018 World Cup. And quite frankly, I'm kind of pulling for them.
That's terrific. So, Chris, why don't you get us rolling here? Let's get some CONCACAF discussion going.
Yeah, well, you know, I've written about some of the CONCACAF teams before, probably most notably Jamaica qualifying in 1998. But more generally, I know that the CONCACAF qualification it's quite a complicated one for someone who's not versed in things like the hexagonal. Yet for anyone who's not sure, can you just give us a brief sort of lowdown on how the qualifying system works over there? Because the layman's eyes, it's improbably complicated.
Yeah, you want to go ahead and take a stab at that one, Nate?
Well, multiple preliminary rounds. Let's just leave it at that. Multiple preliminary rounds lead us to, and this is a system, by the way, here's another disclaimer, a system that's going to be completely changed around with the expanded World Cup going into 2022 and 2026. So what has been the system in place essentially since the mid-90s up until this last final cycle? Multiple preliminary rounds, starting with the minnows of minnows and microscopic islands in the Caribbean Sea and small Central American nations, all the way through these preliminary rounds to what is known as the hexagonal. It's six teams in a 10-game group. It's a six-team group with each team playing home and away against the other, so 10 games. It's been known as the hexagonal by everyone in the CONCACAF region going back to the qualification in the mid-90s. And I've always found the hex to be something that is very unique to CONCACAF. I'm sure you would all agree with that, the entire cycle. And with that comes some kind of love and hate with it. And going into this last hex here in 2017, or I guess what started in late 2016, in November of 2016, I was really, really nostalgic about it and really excited for one last group of six CONCACAF nations the way we've done it for 20 years. And lo and behold, it's the one where the U.S. pull off the ultimate choke job and manage to not qualify for the World Cup. So the top four from that six go, the top three automatically qualify, and the fourth place nation has played a playoff, a home and home playoff with varying FIFA's switched it around a few times in years past. It's been the South American fifth place team. This time around, it was Australia for Honduras, who had finished fourth. So I hope I've summed that up, kept it concise, and allowed us to move forward properly.
Yeah, I think so. It is a little bit different system, but, like you say, it's all going to change, assuming that everything's adopted and we move forward with the 48-team World Cup and all that stupidness. So, Stephen, what are you, coming from England, give us some impressions that you've had over the years about CONCACAF and what that means to the World Cup.
I think from an English perspective, it's always been one of the great mysteries because, we don't get to see kind of like the Gold Cup on television over here. We don't really see much of, we don't get live the qualifiers, the CONCACAF qualifiers for the World Cup or anything like that. So it's always been, an interesting mystery. So beyond Mexico and the USA from, 1990 onwards, we've had some. I think it in a way it's been great in the way that it's offered that kind of sense of the unknown that we've spoke about before in the podcast past about how every World Cup of old used to have this sense of the unknown and the nice surprises and players coming forward and teams, great teams coming forward, because we didn't really see football as a pan Europe or pan world, obsession, or, we didn't get to see the games that we now get to see. So me and Dan spoke about it, but the last podcast was that by the time the 1998 World Cup had come along, that we could sit and watch, entire season of Serie A or the La Liga. So there was less surprises in the players that we saw. We could see the blossoming of Ronaldo at Barcelona and Inter Milan. So we got to see these players before they got to a World Cup, and it was a very different concept. But CONCACAF continues to give that because we don't get to see much of CONCACAF. So we all expect Mexico to be there. We all expect the United States. We've become, we've grown to expect the USA to be there. But when we get Costa Rica coming forward in the way that they have, even up to the last World Cup, and that was just one of the best things about the 2014 World Cup, was how well Costa, that group that they were drawn into, Uruguay, Italy, England, that's a group of death of substance there. But Costa Rica nailed it, and they finished top of the group. They beat Uruguay, they beat Italy, and then by the time they get to the England game, it was just we don't really need much from this. It was just brilliant to see, and I'm looking forward to seeing what Panama have in store. But I can go back to 82, and I remember El Salvador, being there, and you know, Chris has touched on Jamaica and Trinidad and Tobago for 2006 as well. You can add into that. But that's what I love about the CONCACAF section, is that sense of something to learn. There's, you know, there's a surprise there just waiting. And I'm looking forward to seeing what the, you know, what the next one is, whether that's Mexico being able to make it beyond the last 16, or another fine showing from Costa Rica, or just what can Panama, you know, bring to the party.
So, Nate, you know, those of us who live in CONCACAF territory, we sort of get used to the, you know, the CONCACAF style, if you will, and the, sort of the physical play and the beyond physical play sometimes from countries like El Salvador, Honduras, for example. Why don't you give our listeners, some of them who probably aren't as familiar with CONCACAF, sort of the sense of what it is to be a CONCACAF team and why it's different than other confederations.
Well, let's see, a CONCACAF World Cup qualifying match, a theoretical CONCACAF World Cup qualifying match. It's kind of like a bullfight crossed with a wrestling match crossed with a somewhat football match. It's pretty much the routine that we follow in this region, much to the chagrin of many within the region. Many people have been you know, long fed up with the happenings of CONCACAF. There's a certain a guilty pleasure with enjoying much of the shenanigans that we see on a routine basis in this region. And there were a number of people within these United States who spoke of their desire to see the United States national team maybe not be so shy in terms of quote unquote dropping to that level and the deep gamesmanship level, and maybe not being so high and mighty when it comes to honor and ethics, and just taking the approach of, well, if we're going to be down in the mud pits competing with gritty, sometimes, quite oftentimes, dirty teams who are going to play this type of game, well, maybe we should have a little bit of that within us. Maybe we should have a little bit of that same chip on our shoulders instead of being a bit soft and a bit beatable and having the various flaws that we saw from the United States throughout this final hexagonal in 16 and 17. And I think back to one moment in that October night, on that October night that will go down as one of the most absurd, depending on who you are, maybe beautiful nights in the history of this footballing region. And that was the three games going on, all three games impacting one another, with the United States somehow dropping from third place to fifth based on the other two results that went down, with Honduras beating Mexico, who had already qualified, and with Panama coming back to beat Costa Rica, who had already qualified. And there was a moment in Panama where it's in added time and a ball bounces out up over the line near the technical area and onto an adjacent running track. And the Costa Rican players were honorable. They were going for the match. They weren't just, by no means were they throwing a towel or anything. They were honorable. They were playing. They led 1-0 in the match. Blas Perez, the age-old Panamanian forward, had scored the equalizer by essentially punching a ball on the ground. I have no idea how the goal was allowed. But back to it was like 94th minute, and a ball bounces onto the track, and a Costa Rican player is frantically running over to it, wants to get it and take a quick throw and transition the other way. And a Panamanian ball boy comes sprinting, I swear to God, like a 100-meter dash at least. And this kid has Olympics in the future. Comes flying through, and as the Costa Rica player is reaching down to grab the ball, kid comes through and just on a gorgeous half volley, like leaves his feet and launches this ball into the night, flies away. Final whistle blows 25, 30 seconds later. And I'm thinking to myself, if there's one moment that has ever summed up CONCACAF, that was it for me. And sometimes That's what it takes. And for me, everybody, oh, that ball boy, that's a disgrace. No, to me, that ball boy is a hero. And that ball boy helped Panama qualify for the World Cup.
Oh, yeah. CONCACAF just, you know, and this is what I want to get into a little bit, Chris, is maybe not from the outside, right? So that's kind of the root of my question is, do you guys, you know, in Europe, do you see the shenanigans of CONCACAF? And, you know, do your announcers talk about the absolute crap that goes on in this federation? Or is it just, you know, they don't even cover that?
Unfortunately, I think it's the latter. I mean, the incident that Nate has just described, I haven't seen. And that's just really typical of the lack of coverage with regards to the CONCACAF matches over here. It's sad, really, because it's a bit like the Copa Libertadores and the lack of coverage here and all the fascinating things that go on in that competition. There's a lack of, I wouldn't say there's a lack of appetite for it because football fans' interests are growing more and more diverse, but there certainly seems to be a lack of appetite from broadcasters to sort of publish this material worldwide. I'm not quite sure why, because, like I say, I definitely think there's an appetite for it, particularly with the likes of Panama, who really qualified for this tournament, and it was just a fantastic story in the way they managed to do so. We've heard more from United States commentators about the tragedy of them not qualifying, but you know, I think there's certainly an appetite for fans to hear more of these types of stories, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, there's just nutty stuff that goes on every tournament, you know, and the Gold Cup is just, I mean, the Gold Cup itself is usually a disaster. You know, whether it's the pitches they're playing on or the officials or you know, something turns it into an absolute disaster. And you can almost count on it, you know, year after year. But so, you know, I realize that, you know, with only three positions guaranteed into the World Cup, you know, CONCACAF has not, you know, outside of maybe Mexico, the U.S. made a nice run in 2002. Costa Rica's made a run here and there. How do you see kind of the future of this region, Nate? And you know, is it going to get stronger, weaker? What's going to happen here?
Well, I think the waters of world football, Jim, are going to be very diluted. And if we're talking about the as you said, the stupidity of the downright stupidity of the expanded World Cup and kind of everything that goes with it. Yeah, I think the waters of world football are going to be very diluted. There's going to be a lot of, I know how much we all hate the word. There's gonna be a lot of parody in world football, as we're going to say. The international game, I think, is going to turn into far more of a crapshoot, and it's not going to be as much of the cream rising to the top. You know, that's my view just from right now with where things stand and from what we know moving forward on a FIFA level than a CONCACAF level. I think it's going to just follow along with the world governing body and their plans for, you know, where the international game specifically is going. I think CONCACAF is kind of just going to follow suit. I want to go back to something that Steven touched on, which was Costa Rica's group in the 2014 World Cup and how that relates to all the utter chaos and oftentimes downright disgraceful nonsense that we've become accustomed to within the CONCACAF region and just the pick your choice word, just downright nonsense that goes on in this region. Costa Rica come from that region. Costa Rica have had plenty of those folkloric tales to tell themselves of how their home field advantage at the Saprissa Stadium helped them get through various games and all sorts of great, great, very CONCACAF-y, quote-unquote CONCACAF-y things from Costa Rica over the years. And what did Costa Rica, coming from these stereotypes that sadly develop for a reason about this region on a footballing level, Costa Rica come from that. That's all anyone knows about them. Oh, man, it's the, you know, the third team from that crazy region. And they went into a group with Luis Suarez and Cavani's Uruguay, with England and Italy. And not only did they come out of what was arguably the group of death at the 2014 World Cup, they won the group made it all the way to the quarterfinals. And if it wasn't for a Dutch masterstroke from, of all people, LVG out there in 2014 for Louis van Gaal to throw on Krul for the penalty shootout. I'll never forget that. He's subbing off his goalie in the 120th minute. What is this? He had this mastermind thing that Krul was going to come in and be the penalty maestro, and he was. And if I recall correctly, I think he saved every one. I think he saved three of them, and it was a 3-0 win on penalties for Holland in that quarterfinal. That's how close Costa Rica, as the team that is considered by people within this region, people who I often call snobs, people who are diehard USA and Mexico fans who just ignore the Ticos, who don't even consider the Ticos to be something worth talking about. Not only do we have not time for Panama or Honduras or anybody else, you're not even going to talk about Costa Rica, not even acknowledge their existence. They were a penalty shootout against the Dutch away from the semifinals of the World Cup. And for me, that's the greatest performance in a World Cup from a CONCACAF nation. That's better than the U.S. in 2002. If it wasn't for the U.S. matching up against another CONCACAF nation in Mexico in 2002 in the round of 16, I don't know if the U.S. make the quarterfinals.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, Costa Rica in 2014 in Brazil is the greatest page in a CONCACAF team's World Cup book. It's the greatest performance in a World Cup from a team from this region. And it made me kind of... And I'm sure you can hear this in my voice. We're not talking about them. It made me kind of adopt them as one of my own. I love the Costa Rica national team, and I love kind of throwing that in Mexico and U.S. fans alike in both of their faces. You know, that you guys should all be looking up to the Ticos.
Yeah.
Oh, completely. It is. It's the way it should be. Because, it shows how much that CONCACAF, you know, goes under the radar. Is that, as Nate put it there brilliantly, they were the story of the last World Cup. And I think it's because in the next step, Brazil get absolutely hammered by Germany. I think it was at the Maracanã, the 7-1, just obliterates everything from that 2014 World Cup of what went before that game. It overshadows absolutely everything. And that includes Costa Rica's, you know, I mean, there should be a film made about Costa Rica's run to the quarterfinals of the 2014 World Cup. It was a work of art. And, you know, and I want to see more of that. And given the group that they're in, now, no disrespect to that group, but, you know, Brazil, you would expect to win it. But Costa Rica are on a, you know, at the very least, a level footing, if not, you know, more likely to qualify for the last 16 than Switzerland and Serbia are. You know, I want to see more of this. You know, it's a glorious thing.
No, it was definitely a beautiful run, and you know, that's kind of what I love about CONCACAF in a way, is that it's so unpredictable. You know, there's very little competition, I would say, from a pure footballing nature during the qualifications, right? Because you pretty much know there's going to be U.S., Mexico, and then one or two, depending on who is up or down at that any given moment. But sometimes we get these beautiful teams that just they come together just out of magic, out of nowhere, and put together these beautiful sides. I mean, I saw in the Gold Cup here a couple of summers ago, Martinique was here in Denver playing in the Gold Cup. And they were absolutely stunning. They were an absolutely brilliant football team. And I'm not even sure if Martinique is a country. You know, does anyone know that? Are they a country or is it?
They're a French principality, Jim.
There you go. And here they are playing in, you know, in the Gold Cup. And, you know, they took on Mexico. And it was just, it was an absolutely brilliant game. But,
I want to correct that. Not a principality, an insular region, and I may or may not have looked that up to clarify. But just want to you know, be factual here. Insular region of France, located in the Lesser Antilles in the Eastern Caribbean Sea, Martinique.
There you go. And they have got a whole bunch of players from second division in France, and all these guys who claim, you know, some sort of heritage through Martinique, but. They got a ton of good players on that on that side, and really enjoyable football to watch. But so, Chris, as we start to wind down here on our little CONCACAF mini pod here, you know, why don't you do you have anything you ever wanted to know about CONCACAF but were afraid to ask?
Just leading on from our discussions just now, what I'd like to know is it likely that we'll see a repeat of Costa Rica in 2014? Who's going to be the surprise package of this tournament? We went through Costa Rica's group, and you know, it's certainly feasible they could clinch second place. But what about Panama? What about Mexico? You know, what are their chances, and the players? Who should we be looking out for to make an impact?
Well, when you're talking about the groups, when you're talking about teams' chances in groups, I look at Costa Rica as the best of all of the CONCACAF nations. The other draws for Mexico and for Panama are very tough. Mexico's group with the reigning champions in Germany, South Korea. There's actually a very unique rivalry between Mexico and South Korea that goes back to Southern California friendlies that used to happen in the late 1990s and early 2000s back at the LA Coliseum with Korea and Mexico. Mexico and Sweden, who've matched up historically a few times. I don't think there's any easy game in Mexico's group. So you would think coming in surely as the giants of the region, especially without the U.S., you would think that Mexico would, you know, be the CONCACAF team with the best chance. No, I think it's Costa Rica. I mean, we talked about Panama's group with England, Tunisia, and Belgium. I think that's a more difficult group than Brazil, Switzerland, and Serbia. I hear Costa Rica, Brazil, Switzerland, Serbia, and I'm thinking second place for the Ticos. I'm really deep down, and this is purely predictions in May. But with that being said, a month out, I look at those things on paper, and I definitely see Costa Rica as the CONCACAF team with the best chance to advance to the next round. And as far as players within the Costa Rica squad, there's a number of guys to look out for. I sometimes kind of, you know, hate it when we're talking about the goalkeeper, because we want to talk about the play in the field. We want to talk about what's actually flowing through the pitch, which in 2014 was just a cast of brilliant characters led, I felt, by Brian Ruiz, the seems like ageless a midfielder who's played in Portugal and has played in England over the years, played all over Europe in his career, in his early to mid 30s now, certainly on the downslope of the career, but there doesn't really seem to be too harsh of a slope for Brian Ruiz. So always look out for him. I think he'll be a main person involved. And in 2014, it's also, I feel, very important to point out for Costa Rica with that run. It wasn't just upset wins and smash and grab late set piece wins over the likes of Uruguay, Italy, and England. No, they played total football, and it was brilliant to watch. But a big thing that they had on their side was a man by the name of Keylor Navas, who had, I think, in 2014, kind of thrust himself into the spotlight with what was going on with his club career and his transition to Real Madrid, and kind of always being, seems like, very underappreciated by the Madrid faithful and by the La Liga media at large, always kind of looking at Navas as, I don't know if he's Real Madrid quality. I don't know if he's kind of just holding a place until David De Gea comes. And here we are after all these years, it's just Keylor Navas with, you know, trophy lift after trophy lift as the Madrid goalkeeper. And so that's the man that Costa Rica have between the sticks for them. So that's a huge psychological boost. I think Keylor Navas is a guy who benefits. He's a goalkeeper, and this is such a small handful of goalkeepers around the world who I feel they benefit the outfield play just by being there. Just by knowing that he's there, it benefits the fluidity of the play in the outfield. So I think Keylor Navas is going to be huge for Costa Rica, especially against Brazil in the group stage. But yeah, look out for Brian Ruiz. Look out for Yendrick Ruiz is another player to look out for, a fringe one, another Ruiz. There's a few other players, but it all seems to come back to Keylor Navas when outsiders especially look at this Costa Rica team, because he's arguably the most accomplished CONCACAF player of all time. That's another hot debate here with big fans of Rafa Márquez, who will be playing in his incredibly his fifth World Cup potentially for Mexico here in 2018. That's a really interesting argument of, you know, the career of Rafa Márquez might be better than Keylor Navas, but when it comes to winning the Champions League and winning La Liga, Rafa Márquez also won the Champions League in 06, but who, for your money, you out there listening, is the most accomplished player in the history of the CONCACAF region? There's a damn good case to be made for Costa Rican goalkeeper Keylor Navas.
Yes, there is. Yes, there is. So, Steven, as we go into the our final approach here, what do you have anything for our CONCACAF expert here, Mr. Nate?
Yeah, I'd be interested to know what he thinks the future for the United States is after the failure of qualification for 2018 and the potential to host in 2026. What does he see in the years ahead for the USA?
You want to give me a nice little transition here, Jim? I feel like I got to take a deep breath and, you know, maybe take a sip of something nice here before I answer this one.
How about some good old fashioned American bourbon? That ought to get you fired up for this question.
Okay, I've cracked open the popcorn now. I'm ready.
Welly, well, well. United States, there's a multitude of ways that things could go, but sadly, as we've seen here in this country with the U.S. Soccer Federation elections that went down and the quote-unquote transition from from Sunil Gulati to now the reigning president of United States Soccer, Carlos Cordero. The status quo is going to remain in power, and the quote-unquote revolution that many people spoke of on the night of we just call it the night of Trinidad and Tobago back in October of 2017. On that night and the subsequent days and weeks that followed, you kept hearing that word revolution, and I spoke all about this actually on a podcast with our friend John Townsend recently, a great friend of These Football Times. The revolution doesn't exist. Things are going to stay politically the way they have always been, and the occasional decent play on the field over the years has overshadowed the downright corruption that goes on off the field, and all sorts of problems when it comes to structure and government and implementation of various things, all the way down to the youth level of this game, the pay-to-play system that plagues U.S. soccer, and all these different things were being talked about finally when the U.S. somehow managed to finish fifth in the final hexagonal and lose that game to Trinidad and Tobago to an already eliminated sixth place TNT team who they just needed to get a point against, and they were literally in Russia. Suddenly all these issues are being talked about, these issues that nobody ever talked about when they existed for 10, 15, 20 years. Suddenly now everyone wanted to talk about it. You kept hearing the word revolution. The revolution ain't going to happen, and it's going to be mediocrity for a long time. And that might sound pessimistic, but I feel it's just realistic. The status quo is here to stay, and there will be no revolution in U.S. soccer. And when it comes to how that translates to on the pitch, the U.S. could have scraped in and made a run in the World Cup. I mean, people forget Mexico in 2013 almost had an equally disgraceful thing happen and would have failed to qualify had it not been for Sanssouci, this iconic CONCACAF moment where an already qualified United States team literally rescued their greatest rival, who had just choked and choked and choked all the way down to losing their final game to Costa Rica. And all Panama needed was the win at home, and they were up 2-1 in stoppage time, and Bram Zusi scored the goal for the U.S. that qualified Mexico and got them into the repechaje against New Zealand, which they then easily won and made a great run, made a fun run in the 2016 World Cup and almost took down Holland in the round of 16 and beat Croatia in the group stage. So I think that's the funniest thing here is that the U.S., if they would have qualified, I think the U.S. team could have made a run very easily. Could have made a run in this World Cup, and they would have made the run. They would have made it to the round of 16, played a valiant game in the knockout stages, lost in heartbreaking fashion the way they have the last couple of World Cups, and none of these issues would have ever been talked about. So at least they're being talked about now, but the revolution ain't going to come, and it's going to be mediocrity for a long time for this U.S. team. And finishing up, you talk about the 2026 World Cup. Give it to Morocco. Give it to Morocco. Give it to Morocco.
Yeah, I'm afraid you're right, Nate. This is. I was very disheartened when Carlos Cordero won the USSF presidency, because it really, reaffirmed the fact that, there are too many powers that be that are going to protect whatever it is, the little chunk of whatever it is they have. And they're not going to allow, any of the positive things that could have come out of missing a World Cup, the opportunity to rebuild, the opportunity to really take a look at your whole program the way Germany did, around 2000. All of that was pissed away when they elected Carlos Cordero as USSF president. And so, to me, I hate to agree with you, but it's going to be, 9 miles of bad road for the United States and football.
Well, it's a tough thing to agree with. It's a tough thing for many people to acknowledge. I mean, we talk about, interventions. The first thing is admitting you have a problem. And there's no willingness to admit these things from many of the people who stand to benefit from the system that's long been in place. And so when it comes to how that system impacts everything, well, then none of those things in every trickle-down form are ever going to change, either if there's no change from the top down. It's basically on people in this country, whatever your ethnic, cultural, economic background or standing is. It's basically, the positive spin on it, the hopeful spin on all this is that, well, you know what? It's a challenge to all of us at a grassroots level to do our own thing. And to not have dependence on Soccer United marketing and not have dependence on the United States Soccer Federation to make us happy or to do anything for the enhancement of our lives on a footballing or social level, and realizing that they are money hungry, corrupt pigs on every single level. And it's up to us to give football and give soccer to our children and our friends and family. And that's how we got to do it. That's how we got to do it. We got to do it in every community, and we got to focus on our community. And maybe 50, 60 years from now, we will win the 99 team World Cup in 2070.
Well,
brilliant answer. I think the great thing about it is that so much of it is familiar from like an English perspective with the English FA. And I've said this to John Townsend before in another podcast we did. I think it was in the wake of England being knocked out of the last World Cup or the European Championships when Iceland beat them, was that there is this, wonderful propensity not to change. To send out a lot of messages that there's going to be a root and branch overhaul and change of everything, yet nothing actually changes. All they do is they just change the desk for a nice shinier desk, and that's pretty much the sum total. But any nation, but you can probably look at Brazil and what everything that happens with the CBF over the years is that nations and they have to succeed in spite of themselves. And that's the picture that I get with the USA at the minute, is that any kind of ground that they make up will be in spite of themselves, but that will make the mountain so much bigger and so much more satisfying to climb should you do that.
I agree 100%, Stephen. I hate to, but I do. So, our time has come to a close here, gentlemen. I want to thank Nate.
I'm glad we could end on such a happy note, Jim.
Yeah, this is so upbeat and happy and yeah. But Nate, how can folks follow you and read up on what you're up to and all that good stuff?
Oh, that's a much more pleasant way to end. Yeah, for plenty of coverage of Mexico, Costa Rica and Panama, you know, those CONCACAF nations that qualified for Russia 2018 and will be playing at the very least 3 World Cup matches this summer. You can follow me on Twitter at Nate Abaurrea, last name Abaurrea. Brush up on your Basque when you get a chance. Follow our good friend Ewan McTeer, who is the ultimate expert on Basque football. Jim, you flattered me calling me an expert on the CONCACAF region. I am far, far from it in comparison to what Ewan is when it comes to Spanish football and Basque football as a whole. So I wanted to actually, that was a big thing. I wanted to give a tip of the cap to Ewan, because without Ewan, I would have never met you guys. And then without you guys, would have never gotten hooked up with the Athletic Club Peña of California, based out of San Francisco, with a chapter out in Bakersfield and with stuff down here in San Diego, hooked up with some great people from Real Sociedad after we did that podcast. Some fans of A-Bar reached out to me. So cheers to all y'all. Cheers to Omar. Cheers to you, Jim. Cheers to Ewan and everybody that got me involved originally a couple of years ago. With these football times, it's been such a beneficial relationship. It's helped me get more and more in touch with my Basque roots. So I've greatly enjoyed that. And for all of your Basque fun, Mexican soccer, CONCACAF enthusiasm, stand-up comedy, and whatever the hell else I get myself into, at Nate Abaurrea on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and all that good stuff.
Terrific. Well, listen, thank you so much again, Nate and Chris and Steven. Chris and Steven will be back soon for another edition of our continuing series on the World Cup. That should do it. I'm Jim Hart for These Football Times, and this has been a special CONCACAF episode of The Lob. And pay attention this summer, and watch out for those crazy CONCACAF teams, because they just might reach up and bite you.